Bruce Campbell is, I believe, a self-confessed B-movie legend. If you've ever seen Evil Dead or Army of Darkness, or even more recent movies like the Spider-Man movies and Spy High, just a few weeks ago, I took my daughter to see that. We had a great time. Then you have seen some of the work of my next guest, Bruce Campbell, who also has a book called Make Love the Bruce Campbell Way, and is in town with his movie, which is called Man with Screaming Brain. And he'll be signing books and showing the movie tonight over the Tivoli at 5:30. But first, stopped in the Paul Harris Show here on KMOX. Welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you here.
In the gateway to the West.
That's us. Yeah. That's your gateway arch right outside our window there.
Yeah, it's a very cool thing.
Yes, it
when
is.
When the sun is out, it's even better.
You can actually see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we went on, we were talking about the Internet Movie Database, which has listings of pretty much everything you've ever done, including Super 8 movies that you made before Evil Dead.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they're on the list, but it makes your resume look good.
Well,
it pads it out a bit.
It certainly extends it. You've got, you know, 65 or so things that you've been involved in here, including Shemp Eats the Moon. Before we talk about anything else, what was Shemp Eats the Moon? Was it anything to do with the Three Stooges?
Shemp Eats the Moon was all my filmmaker cohorts, we all love the Stooges because it's sort of a guy thing, I guess. But Shemp was always one of our favorites because he was always underrated. Everyone went for Curly. I went for Shemp because he just had hidden talents. And he was also the ugliest of all of them.
Yep. He's no Curly Joe when it comes to looks.
No. And in this case, it was that Shemp Eats the Moon is a story of Shemp Malone, a detective, who's looking for the ruined Zori Moon, a famous jewel. And by accident, he winds up ingesting it. So, of course, Shemp Eats the Moon.
There you go. What's so much fun about zombies?
I don't like zombies. I think they're a bore, honestly.
This from a man who's been in the all-time classic zombie movies.
Yeah, but those were individual possession episodes. Not just an army of, like, drooling zombies.
Yeah.
That leaves me cold. They're not fast enough. They're not bright enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they get possessed... You know, like The Exorcist, to me, that's still scary.
Yes.
Because you could say that Linda Blair became a zombie, but really the possession's slightly different.
Right.
Zombies are just, their arms fall off, you know, they're messy.
I've never understood how anyone has ever been caught by a zombie.
I don't either.
They're the slowest moving creatures on the planet.
I think if you have
enough... Furniture moves faster than a zombie.
Yeah, but if you have enough of them, I think you can gang up on somebody. That's the best I can offer. George Romero would know.
Yes.
He can answer that.
Yes.
Let's get him on the phone.
No, let's not do that. But you worked with Sam Raimi on these, and you guys actually became friends years before, and then...
Yeah, we met in drama class in about 1975.
Mm-hmm. And you've done many projects with him through the years, but yeah. Evil Dead is the one you're best known for. And I told you in the hallway as we were walking in here, a whole bunch of people have come up to me here at KMOX today and said, "You're having Bruce Campbell on?" The Bruce Campbell? He's going to be in the studio? Which is a pretty good response for a guy who calls himself a B-movie legend.
Well, you know, the good news is B-movies don't necessarily mean bad.
Right.
They're like Avis. They try harder.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have less resources. The people who are working on it are not as experienced. So it's a harder row, you know, harder row to hoe, I guess the phrase is. But I find it more rewarding because... That's where the weird stories are. That's where the offbeat stuff is. That's where you find stuff that's not Dukes of Hazzard.
Mm-hmm. And anything that's not Dukes of Hazzard is a good thing.
Well, I think so. You know, I used to apologize for being in B-movies for those very reasons that, these movies are not as polished. They're not as slick or glossy. They don't look as good. They don't sound as good. The actors aren't as good. Everything's sort of, the perception is that it's not as good. But now after seeing... Summers like this current summer,
yeah,
where the quote-unquote A movies are, I'm embarrassed for Hollywood. I'm embarrassed to have any affiliation whatsoever because they really are creatively bankrupt.
And I'm so glad you brought this up because it's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today because here's a guy, I mean, you and Sam Raimi collected a few hundred thousand dollars to try to make a movie and it became a cult hit and then you made the second one with more money and then the third one with more money than that. And none of them comes close to the budget for even Deuce Bigalow European Gigolo.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So how come guys who are as clever and creative as you aren't making movies with that budget and Rob Schneider is?
Because Rob... I think he knows the right people. I don't know what Rob is doing. He might be doing something horrible that he can't talk about.
Maybe there's pictures somewhere.
He sold his soul somewhere. I don't know.
Zombies are involved.
I mean, what I don't understand is why a movie executive, wouldn't start a division and say, okay, instead of making one $100 million movies, make 100 $1 million movies.
Mm-hmm.
And half of them would suck and be unwatchable. 25 of them would be okay, mediocre. And 10 of them would be classics.
Yep.
And that would pay for the entire, for the rest of the losers.
Mm-hmm.
So I think on the economic scale, somebody really is missing the boat. And as a result of spending all this extra money, the problem is now they have to have an identifier. That if you're spending $100 million, or even let's say 60, a low-budget movie in Hollywood standards, you got to have Dukes of Hazzard.
Yep.
Because they go, well, if no one's heard of this idea before, our marketing won't approve that. You know, marketing is really running the show now.
Is that right?
When I went in to get my first book published, If Chins Could Kill, Confessions of a B-Movie Actor,
mm-hmm.
every publisher that I pitched had a marketing person in the room that basically folded their hands and said, and what shows have you been on, Mr. Campbell? And how can I do their job for them? You know, that they wanted the guarantee up front,
mm-hmm.
that you've been on Leno or you've been on some nationally syndicated show or mm-hmm. something. It's really weird, and that has so little to do with making movies.
Yeah, I had a quote yesterday from the guy who's the head of Sony Pictures who said, from here on out, we're just going to concentrate on making movies that are really good.
And I thought, they don't know. They don't even know how. They would know where to start.
But the fact that that's a new concept to this guy,
yeah.
from here on out, why have you had a job? How did you get to be the head of Sony Pictures if that wasn't the idea before?
I'll tell you why, because he's a good businessman. You know, it is the movie business, and it's just becoming a little more naked now.
Mm-hmm.
I think pre-Blockbuster, in the pre-Blockbuster era, it was still about money, but it wasn't about the opening weekend. You know, a guy like Tom Cruise, he's got to have a $50 million opening, or someone's going to get fired.
Mm.
A guy like Bruce Campbell, we got to have like a $500 opening weekend, and we're fine. So we just concentrate on making the movie. That's the one nice thing about it. I've been in plenty of stinkers, admittedly, but you know, you just make the movie. It's more about making the movie. That's why I became an actor. I just wanted to be an actor. I didn't want to have to, you know, be in a dog and pony show. Where Tom Cruise, no wonder he's acting weird. They're sending the poor sap around the world for 2 months solid to promote this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd jump up and down on couches too, if you know. I really would.
But you've also been involved with Sam Raimi in, you know, some big money, high concept stuff like Spider-Man.
Now, Sam, he's a special case because he always needed more money. You know, his ideas were always impossible to do. And in Evil Dead, we'd do it with, you know, spit and baling wire and somehow fake our way through it.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's actually in a much more comfortable position because he always has these crazy visuals, crazy ideas. And now they can go, okay, Sam, sure, that's easy.
Yeah.
Because now he has the resources to do it. So he's a pretty good match for Hollywood.
Also, with computers, you can do so much that you couldn't do in 1981.
Absolutely.
And get it in there. Now,
yeah.
When he makes a movie, are you guaranteed a job?
No. He's made some movies that I have not been in. I got cut out of Quick and the Dead. Because he had no intention of using the footage in the first place.
That was Leonardo DiCaprio, Gene Hackman, Sharon Stone.
Yeah, and Russell Crowe.
Oh, Crowe was in that?
Yeah, yeah.
Did he play the drunken...
He was the preacher guy who got the crap beat out of him.
Oh!
That was
before he was Russell Crowe who beats the crap out of other
people. I actually
people.
Could have played that particular role, but I got The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., another Western,
uh-huh.
first, and so I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But so Sam gave me a cameo and concocted an entire scene just to shut a complaining actor up.
What do you mean?
Well, it was a character actor, Pat Hingle. You know, he's been in 900 movies.
Yep.
And his daughter in the movie Quick and the Dead is taken by a scumbag and sort of forced into prostitution. And Pat Hingle kept following Sam around the set going, I never do anything to stand up for my daughter. That's not right. And day after day he would do this. I come to visit Sam one day on the set. One day.
Mm-hmm.
I had one break in shooting, and I just wanted to sit back behind the monitor and laugh with him, you know, that he's doing this big Hollywood movie with Gene Hackman.
Yep.
I was really proud of him. And the second I show up, he goes, come here, you, come here. Grabs me, takes me to the makeup department, gives him this whole convoluted explanation of what he wants them to do. I'm like, Sam, don't, no. Just shut up, you. Come over here. And he takes me to wardrobe, same thing. Makes me up into a scummy character who hits on Pat Hingle's daughter, and he comes in to save the day.
Uh-huh.
And Sam goes, oh, and Pat didn't know who I was. And Sam goes to Pat, you know, this guy's like a stuntman. You can rough him up. I really want you to kick him in the butt really hard and really grab him around the neck and really get him, you know, and say, you keep away from my daughter.
Yeah.
And we shot this for, you know, 2 hours.
Oh.
And did he really go after you? Pat walked away. Oh, he was, oh, of course. You keep away from my daughter. And each time Sam would go, cut, Pat, it didn't look like you meant it. I mean, this is Sam Raimi. This is who we're talking about here.
Yeah.
And Pat walks away completely happy afterward. Sam comes over to me and goes, I'll send you the video because I'm not even going to print it. He had no intention of using it whatsoever.
And this and is I'm your buddy complete, who had you beaten up by Pat Hingle.
My quote-unquote friend, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Sam.
Maybe it's better when he doesn't call. Or maybe you shouldn't visit him on a set. Maybe that's the lesson.
I'm going to get rid of call waiting. That's what I'm going to do.
That's what it is. Tell me about watching Gene Hackman work since you were there that day. I mean, did you get a chance
to study this guy? It was very interesting. He'd been around so long. You know, when you've really been around a long time, you don't take crap from anybody. And Sam was younger than his son. So Sam had to prove himself. And there was one classic case where the first day of shooting, Sam comes up to him and goes, okay, Gene, I like you. You're coming out this door here, and I want you to signal to tip your hat to Pat Hingle across the way and come on over here and sit in this chair. And then I'm going to add a line. It's a line where you whisper, what are the odds on the kid? And there's this long pause. Gene Hackman goes, I'm not doing any of that. And so now fortunately for Sam, he is a prepared director, because that's what Gene was doing, was going, do you know what you're doing? That was his way of saying why.
Testing the kid.
Should tell me why. Have you thought this through? Sam goes, okay, you don't have to tip your hat, but I got a shot of Pat Hingle acknowledging you start the gunfight. You have to start it. He goes, you can wave, nod, wink, point, but I thought you'd just tip your hat so that you start the event. He goes, okay, I'll tip my hat, but I'm not going to sit in this chair over here. Sam goes, you don't have to sit in this chair, but you're the king. The king sits. Look at all the extras. I've got all the extras standing because all the peasants stand. The king sits.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, okay, I'll tip my hat and I'll sit in the chair, but I'm not going to say what are the odds on the kid. Sam goes, you don't have to. But later in the movie, they're going to find out that kid, Leonardo DiCaprio, is your son, and they'll reflect back and go, oh, he really was kind of... He was curious and interested and cared about his son.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting character development, very minor. And so I went to visit Sam that same day, and he pops in a tape of the dailies and goes, take a look at this. Gene Hackman comes out, tips his hat, sits in the chair, whispers, what are the odds on the kid? So he got it by being prepared.
And showing Gene him that I know what I'm doing.
He would have eaten him alive if Sam didn't have the answers.
That is a great story.
Yeah.
It is not one of the stories you'll find in Make Love the Bruce Campbell Way, the new book that he is signing at the Tivoli.
That's right, because
tonight.
There is no story.
We'll get to that in just a moment. He also has this movie which he's screening tonight at the Tivoli called Man with Screaming Brain, and we'll talk about that in just a moment as well. Bruce Campbell is in the studio on the Paul Harris Show. It's News Talk 1120 KMOX. In the studio with B-movie legend Bruce Campbell. And we're going to take some phone calls, some fans of Bruce's now. 314-436-7900, toll-free 800-925-1120. I'm guessing that it won't be long before somebody has an Evil Dead question for you, Bruce. But before we get to that...
That'll take about 2 seconds.
Yeah, before we get to that, let's talk about your new book, which I'm holding in my big grubby hands here. It's called Make Love the Bruce Campbell Way. It's about a movie star named Bruce Campbell, or a guy in the movies named Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, he's the cheapest guy I could get.
But it's a novel.
Yes, it is a novel. So thankfully, there's no love advice. No one will have to read anything about any love advice whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a scenario whereby it sort of poses a question. It's a what-if book. What would happen if you took a B-movie actor, meaning me, and put him in his big shot at the A-leagues in a Mike Nichols movie called Let's Make Love,
mm-hmm.
opposite Richard Gere and Renee Zellweger? He's the third lead. What would happen?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is it's a bad idea. So I kind of single-handedly take down this big Paramount movie produced by Robert Evans and... You know, written by the guy who wrote Working Girl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a big disaster.
What's the closest you've come to that actually happening in your career?
I did try and become a movie star one time for the movie The Phantom.
Mm-hmm.
I got down to me and Billy Zane for who would wear the purple tights.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God he got it.
You couldn't picture yourself in purple tights, or you only could for a short
while? Well, A, I couldn't picture myself in the tights. B, the movie died a thousand deaths.
Yes.
So that would have been my last starring role anyway.
But that's because you weren't in it, Bruce.
Well, you say that. I can't say that. But, you know, I think it was a good omen. And it was an omen just to be an actor and don't worry about what happens.
What were the superpowers the Phantom had?
That he looked cool in purple tights.
That's about it.
He rode a white horse. You know, it was, I don't know. That maybe that's the problem.
I think that is the, you know, Spider-Man. Okay, we get the Spider-Man concept. Superman, we got it. Batman, we got it.
Right.
The Phantom does what again?
He runs around and beats guys up.
That's about it.
He gets mad a lot. Ooh, I don't know.
He's really different. Let's go to the phones. 314-436-7900. Toll free 800-925-1120. And by the way, Bruce will be signing the book and showing his new movie, Man with Screaming Brain, which we'll talk about in a moment, tonight at the Tivoli, starting at 5:30. That's on the Del Mar Loop. Scott, you're on the Paul Harris Show. Hello.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
And also, thanks for having Bruce on. He's one of my favorite actors.
But you're a man with great taste, clearly.
Hey, Bruce, you've done a lot of great stuff. You did a great episode of The X-Files, and you've been on some TV. And well, I think my favorite thing you ever did was Bubba Hotep.
Yeah, that one.
I don't wonder if you'd...
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, can you talk about filming that? Did you ever feel like you had the king in the room with you, or, you know, any good stories like that?
There was nothing transcendental about making Bubba Hotep other than the fact that I had to wear a lot of makeup.
Explain the basic concept for people.
Basically,
who haven't seen
the concept is Elvis Presley's still alive. He's 68. He's in an East Texas rest home. He's dying from cancer on his penis. And he teams up with a guy who thinks he's JFK, who happens to be Ossie Davis. To stop a mummy that's sucking the souls out of the old people at the rest home. So it's a
That story again.
Yeah, that same old story.
They do that one more time.
It's a redemptive Elvis mummy picture. And those are my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of came out of nowhere, written originally as a novella by Joe Lansdale, who's really kind of a cult writer. And Don Coscarelli, who directed, is a cult director. So it was sort of the cult show.
Mm-hmm.
And it really connected with folks because it wasn't really just a Roger Corman idea. There was actually a strange bit of substance and almost a little bit of pathos in there. And it was enough so that I get more women at my signings now.
Oh, yeah?
It's not just the guy who's 25 with a black band T-shirt.
Do they want to hear you do Elvis? Do you get that?
I do get that. I get people who want me to say lines of dialogue, and I just simply say, if I was your little monkey, I would.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that pretty much sums that up for you, Scott. Thanks for calling. Here is Jim on KMOX. Hello.
How you doing, Paul?
Good, thanks.
Hey, Bruce, nice to hear you, man. I love your work.
Thank you, sir.
Listen, I got a question, though.
Yes.
Why doesn't Hollywood, this might sound stupid, I've always wondered, why doesn't Hollywood make like a horror movie about Satan? Because isn't he like the king of all what's scary and horrifying? I mean, you could have a plot where, you know, somebody falls into the pit of hell and you got a hero that has to go through hell and fight all the demons and get to Satan himself to rescue him.
That's not a movie already?
Oh, they had to have made a movie about some guy goes to hell. They had to have. We'll look it up on IMDb. You know, I mean, sure, why not? It's horror films come in all forms. Why not go right to have the worst, the most evil of all time?
There you go.
But, you know, they've played... I guess they got more hung up in having people possessed by a demon, mm-hmm. or a devil, mm-hmm. or possessed by Satan.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of possessed movies out there. I don't know, actually going there to the piece of real estate? I don't know, maybe.
Do we count George Burns in Oh God, You Devil? I don't think so. Let's talk about your movie, Man with Screaming Brain.
Man with the Screaming Brain,
I went to see The Aristocrats over the weekend, the Penn Jillette Paul Provenza movie, which was showing at the Tivoli, where you'll be tonight. And as one of the trailers, one of the previews they showed before it, was Man with Screaming Brain, which has these...
There is a "the" in there, by the way. Man with the Screaming
Man
Brain.
Man with the Screaming Brain.
You make it sound like it's foreign picture. Man with Screaming Brain. I saw that last night.
I apologize.
It's okay. It's all right.
And it's got screaming graphics coming out.
Yes.
Like, it's like a 1950s or 60s
yeah.
B-movie, horror movie.
Yeah.
And there's a guy with a bulging forehead because of some sort of weird...
Horrible transplant, yeah.
Yes. Explain the basic concept and why did you make it?
Boy, why did I make it? I'm embarrassed to say, first of all, it took 19 years to make.
You wrote and directed it.
Yeah, I wrote and directed it, and I had to put myself in it in order to get it made.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, sure, I'll do that too.
Mm-hmm.
The original kernel of an idea was given to my partner David Goodman in a rowboat in 1986, and then it kind of went from there. It sort of fell in and out of financing for years. It became a joke. I even talk about it in my first book. I show little panels of storyboards, and I said, storyboards you'll never see.
Mm-hmm.
And even just a few years ago, I still assumed we would never make that movie. Well, what happened is in a roundabout, and I even submitted it to the Sci-Fi Channel, who wound up co-financing it. And it sat on a shelf there for 2 months, and then an obscure TV movie called Terminal Invasion aired. And they were not thrilled with it, and they just sort of dumped it out on the air. And because of fine people like your listeners, the ratings were well above normal. And I got a call literally the next day saying, A, who are you? B, what else you got?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, funny, I got this thing called Man with a Screaming Brain that's been rotting on your shelf. And, you know, next thing you know, you hear where they're dusting it, blowing the dust off. And they went, we like this picture. So between that and a German tax fund, we put the money together for the movie. And they shoot their movies in Bulgaria. So if you watch Sci-Fi Channel projects and you go, why does that look weird? Mm. It looks weird because it's in the Eastern Bloc. That's okay. Why. And so
it did look a little bit grayish when I saw the trailer. It had that kind of grayish Eastern European
It is what it is. And so I didn't want to have to. The movie was originally set in East L.A. And if you've ever been to Eastern Europe, there are no people of color. In Eastern Europe.
East L.A., a heavily Mexican area.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So I said to Sci-Fi, who would play the Latinos? The gypsies? And so I was able to convince them to let me rewrite it for Bulgaria, because that's the beauty of low-budget movies, is that you got to tap dance as fast as you can the entire time. And I thought, well, we don't have the money to change the street signs because they're Cyrillic. You know, upside down and backwards, basically.
Right.
No vehicle on the road looks the same. You've got these old Russian SUVs left over. You have cars that are two-cylinder engines, and the shell is pressed paper. They come from East Germany at the time.
Wow.
I mean, you and I, if we had a couple of drinks, we could push these cars over, you know? And so I said, why not just embrace it? It's a fish-out-of-water story anyway. And they let me do it. So I'm really glad because we saved a lot of money in it. That way I could just shoot. I could just shoot anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the basic story of a bonehead American businessman, rich pharmaceutical magnat, who made a lot of money off an anti-rejection drug. You know, so you could, putting fingers and body parts together with less difficulty.
Somebody gets a transplant, their body doesn't reject it.
Exactly right. That's it. So he's going to diversify his company by investing in their crumbling infrastructure to get a big tax break for his fourth quarter. So he's there just to make money off the Bulgarians. And through a series of strange events, he winds up getting half the brain of a former KGB operative put in his head.
Mm-hmm.
So the capitalist and the communist must reconcile their differences in order to team up to find the scheming gypsy woman that killed them both.
Again, that old story.
Yeah, same old thing. Rehash time again and again. And so that's the essence of the story. And, because a friend of mine did a movie. I did two movies there back to back last year. And a friend of mine, his movie was set in Portland, but he kept it in Portland. But all of his actors were talking like this. Hey, pal, what is new, buddy? And so then they had to revoice them all.
Uh-huh.
And so then they sounded like this. Hello, pal, how are you?
Mm-hmm.
It sounded like Kimba the White Lion or something, you know? It just didn't sound right. And I made my friend go first. It was the smartest thing I ever did because they wanted a second project. So I said, I got one. Called my friend Josh, and I said, hey, Josh, good news is we're going to make your movie. Bad news is you're going first.
Mm-hmm.
And because I didn't know anything about, Bulgaria, it's just not here.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is different.
That's actually their state slogan. It's not here.
It's not here.
Yeah.
And so I got to watch while my friend Josh went through all the foibles of casting and finding actors, and I pulled my entire cast from his movie. Because the best audition is on a set. You see how they are in front of a camera. Are they idiots? Do they know their lines? What's the story?
Or are they going to pull a Gene Hackman?
Totally, yeah. They're going to ask you silly questions.
Yeah.
And so it made it a lot easier for me, so thanks, Josh.
All right, I got a break. We'll come back with more. The book is called Make Love the Bruce Campbell Way. It's a second one. If Chins Could Kill was a terrific book about the inside workings of the movie business. This is a novel, and the movie, The Man with the Screaming Brain, or just Man with the... I added another the for you. Anyway, it's
thank you.
He'll be at the Tivoli tonight at 5:30, and he's here on the Paul Harris Show today on KMOX. All right, let's take a moment to squeeze in one more phone call for Bruce Campbell here on the Paul Harris Show. Rod, you're on KMOX. Hello.
Hello, guys.
Hi.
How are you?
Hello, Rod.
Earlier, Bruce, you mentioned how you had a movie that you were glad you didn't get the actual lead,
yeah.
lead role.
Yeah.
Was there some other ones that you were very close to that you really wanted?
No, not really. It's amazing. Of all the things that I've auditioned for, and I usually stink at auditions, so I've gotten 3 jobs in 25 years by auditioning.
Hmm.
The rest I've just sort of finagled somehow.
Mm-hmm.
No, I never. If I turned something down, for example, that went on to make $100 million, I still felt that it blew. You know, if I turned it down, it just didn't excite me. It doesn't matter if it made a lot of money or not.
Right.
But on the other hand, I never really didn't get a part that went on to become Cheers or whatever.
Now, that said, I mentioned earlier, you're in Spy High, which opened several weeks ago. I took my daughter to it. We loved it, and we thought you were great as Coach Boomer.
It was fun. You know, it's my third Disney movie. I'm actually more typecast in people's imaginations outside of the industry with average civilians because they only watch what they watch.
Mm-hmm.
Within the industry, I've been able to bounce around a little bit and do, you know, Disney things. I had a TV contract with them at one point.
Well, I enjoyed Spy High quite a bit, and underrated, didn't make enough at the box office. More people should see it, and I hope they do on DVD. And for people who don't see Man with the Screaming Brain at the Tivoli tonight, it'll be out on DVD
soon. It will. That's coming out October 4th, and it's going to premiere on the Sci-Fi Channel September 10th.
And the book is called Make Love the Bruce Campbell Way. What a pleasure having you here today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bruce Campbell on the Paul Harris Show. This is News Talk 1120. KMOX.